Okay, we're starting with the Mishnah on Kufnun Zayin Amud Aleph. It's a series of Mishnayot to deal with two individuals who are trapped, let's say, under a house. In modern day, there's an earthquake, and they're trapped in a house, and we're not sure which one passed away first. So here's Nafala Bayit Alav V'Alaviv, O'Alav V'Almorishav, on the individual and their father, or the individual on someone who would be bequeathing some inheritance to this individual. And then he also has outstanding debts in the sense that he has to pay a ktubatisha, and he has to pay a creditor. So now, Yoshei ha'av umrim ha'ben meit rishon, v'achar kach meit av. Those that inherit the father say, listen, the son passed away first, and then the father. Now, the inheritors of the father can even be the grandchildren. I mean, this individual's children are also inheritors of the father. But they all, for them, the best outcome is that the son had passed away first, and then the father. Why? Because then all the possessions move to the father. And if all the possessions move to the father, and then to them, you avoid having to pay the Baal Chov and the Ketubat Tisha. Because the obligations of the Baal Chov and the Ketubat Tisha are against the son. And if the son has no possessions, then there's nothing to pay them from. So if he passes away first, and then all that's left is with the father, and then the father passes it to the grandchildren and to any other relatives, then the Baal Chov and the Ketubat Tisha have no one to claim from. On the other hand, right, what do the Ketubat Tisha or Baal Chov say? What do they, or the Yoshea Av Omrim, Haben Meit Rishon V'Chakach Meit Av? Baal Chov Omrim, Av Meit Rishon V'Chakach Meit Haben. On the other hand, the Baal Chov says, right, that the father passed away first, and then the son. Why? Because then if the father passes away, where does all of his possessions go? To the son. All of a sudden, now the son has something to pay with. If he has something to pay with, that's what the Baal Chov wants. So he says the father passed away first, then the son, in order that he can make a claim and get his debt repaid. So Beit Shammai Omrim Yachloku. Beit Shammai says, since we have a Safek here, right, then we say Yachloku, they split it. Now why is there really a Safek? Let's think about this in terms of, is it really is a suffix here? With regards to the grandchildren, they're Vadai Yorshim here. No matter who it ends up with, they will end up with the property. Meaning that whether if the son passed away first, and then it went to the father, who's their grandfather, it would come to them. Or if the grandfather passed away first, then their father, they also get the possessions. So they Vadai have a claim on the property. Now let's talk about the Baal Chov. The Baal Chov, on the other hand, really only has a safek claim on the property. Because if the son passed away first, meaning that their father passed away first, and then it all passed to their grandfather, and then to them, the Baal Chov has no claim. On the other hand, if the grandfather passed away first, then that came into possession of the father, Baal Chov has a claim, and then it comes to the grandchildren. So only in one of the two scenarios does the Baal Chov have a claim, so he's a safek, yet the grandchildren have a claim in both instances, and they're a vadai. So how do you have a safek here with yachloku? It sounds like a safek and a vadai. Where do you get a vadai and a vadai here to say that yachloku? The answer is the Beit Shammai l'shitatam, which is that kol ha'omed l'gvot k'gavui domi. And that's Beit Shammai believes that any loan that's outstanding, that is to be collected, we look at it as if collected. We look at it as if you're in possession of that collection, you've already taken possession of it, and therefore it's considered like a vadai claim over here. So you have a vadai and a vadai, and that's why they'll be yachloku. Again, just to be clear here, that the son or the father of these children who are going to inherit has no property. I mean, if he has property, the Baal Chov, of course, can get the property out of him. The problem is here is that he maybe only has metaltim or he has no property. The only way he's going to get property is when the grandfather or his father passes away and passes in property. That's how the Baal Chov will get a hold of it. Without that, the Baal Chov has no claim. On the other hand, Beit Hillel Omrim, Nechasim Bechazkatan. Nechasim Bechazkatan means Bechazkat Yosheav. Because Chazkatan is the ones, the Yosheav have a claim no matter what. And since they have a claim no matter what, they are muhzak in the property. If they're muhzak in the property, the Baal Chov is going to have to come and show that it really went to the Ben or really went to their father in order for him to come and make a claim over here. That's the Mishnah. Now, Tznan Hatam. I have a Mishnah. Someone who lends, a creditor who lends with a shtar, right, with a documented loan, then he can go and make a claim from even encumbered property. I mean, he has a right to go collect his loan out of any property that the Baal Chov has, plus anything he's sold, anything he's pledged to anyone else, he has the first right to that property, and therefore he can take even out of Nechasim Meshubadim. Now this is even if it's absent. If he has a shtar that doesn't have a chrayut written in it, we still say that it's tot sofer hu, that's a mistake, and there should be a chrayut in the shtar. Ayadei edim, if it was only done, the loan was only done with witnesses, but not with a shtar, then goveh minechasim b'nei chorin. Then he's only entitled to collect from free and clear property, only for property that's still in the possession of the Baal Chov, in possession of the debtor. But he can't go after property that the debtor sold, property that the debtor had encumbered to someone else, that he's not entitled to do. So now, by Shmuel. Shmuel wants to know, it's a very important question, which is, the ikne v'kono mahu. If he says in the shtar, if he pledges to his creditor, anything that I acquire in the future will be mishubad, right, will be encumbered to this loan, does that work? Can you create a lien on property that is yet to exist? I understand any property that's in his possession right now, right, that you have a lien on because that exists when you have the loan outstanding, when the creditor comes. On the other hand, what we're suggesting here is, can he then have a lien on property that in the future the debtor goes and purchases or inherits in the future? Is the creditor able to get his hands on that, and does he have a lien on it? As soon as it comes into the estate, does he automatically get possession of it or have a lien on it? So, Mao, Aliba to Rabbi Meir, according to Rabbi Meir, I don't have a question. Damar Adam Makne Davar Shelo Bali Olam. Because over here, you're basically pledging something that's going to be in the future. You don't own the land yet. Nevertheless, we say that you pledge it for the future. So Loti Bailach Devadai Kana. In that case, we have no question that you have a lien on property in the future, according to Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir says you can be Makne. You can give over possession of something that you yet to own, or that is going to be in the future. To be honest with you, it's not so clear that should work over here. Even according to Rabbi Meir, we know, we've seen this a number of times here in Baba Batra, that Davar, when we say that he could be Machneh, Davar Shalol Olam, that's only something that's Ate, right, Lavo. That's only something that will, by definition, come. For instance, fruits on the tree. You're allowed to sell fruits on the tree in the future because every year the tree produces fruits. So that's something that will come for sure, so that you can sell forward. But over here, we're talking about, he's going to purchase property? We have no clue if he's going to purchase property. That's not something that Ati level. We don't know for certain that that's going to come. So why should it work even according to Rabbi Meir? So Tosfos suggests over here that what you have to say, we're going to say it in a second, we're going to say it in the Rabbanan also, but one side of the Rabbanan is that Alima the Shibudei, that the Chachamim extended or gave power or tokef to his Shibud. So though, even though in general Rabbi Meir will demand by your makneh davar shelo bali olam, he'll demand that it has to be right, that it will ati davide, that it's going to happen no matter what. Nevertheless, over here that requirement is waived because the rabbanu were alimei shibudei. They gave strength to the shibud shelo tino del bifnei lavin. So in order not to close the door to loans, so that people have ways to collect their loans, therefore they allowed it to go through. Ella, so what is it? Kiti bayelach ali the rabbanu. You're going to ask the question according to the Rabbonu and the Amri and the Makneh Davar Shelo Bi'Olam. What's the din? So Amar Rav Yosef Tashma. So let's say here, V'chamim Amrim, this is from the Mishnah and Ketubot. What happened? The Mishnah and Ketubot, you have a creditor and a debtor. And the debtor has a loan outstanding. And then the creditor goes and sells land to the debtor. So he sells land to the debtor, he gets cash from the debtor, and then he gives him the land. So the debtor comes before the Beis Din and says, listen, I can't be that I owe him money. Because if I owed him money, there was no way he would sell me land and then take my cash. He would say, give me the cash and pay me the loan. He wouldn't have given me land. He wouldn't have done a transaction with me. The fact that he did a transaction with me shows there must have been no debt outstanding. And so that's the position in the Gemara and Ketubot, with regards to the Admon's position in the Gemara and Ketubot and the Mishnah. Then the Chachamim are going to say, no. He's a Pikeach. Why? Meaning, wait a minute. Beforehand, what did he have? Cash. Cash metaltalim are not necessarily mishubad to the loan. They could disappear any second. So now what did he do? He traded the money, the cash, for land. Land doesn't disappear anymore. Now he has a way to get a hold of his loan. He has the cash, plus the land is now with the debtor that he can go and collect from. So now he's even in a better position. Of course, he'd much rather have it this way, because now he knows where he can get his collection from. He knows how to get paid on his loan. But what do you see from here? When did he purchase the land? He just purchased the land. The land was purchased after the debt was already outstanding, the loan's outstanding, and now we're saying he sells them the land. So this happened way after the outstanding loan, and yet, what do we say? That he has a lien on that property. He's able to purchase that property. So, Amar Lei, Rav, Minei Kamar? Right, when you're talking about the debtor himself, right? Minei, Afilu Miglima Da Katfei. Wait a minute. When you're talking about the debtor himself, you can collect from anything the debtor owns. Even from the shirt on his back, the coat on his back. I mean, a debtor is encumbered to the creditor for anything he owns. I mean, that doesn't matter. Anything is, but cash, you know, animals, karka, anything that he has is there, has to be paid the loan. The only time the questions arise is when he gets rid of it, when he sells it. If he sells his, if he gives away his metalklim or sells his metalklim, then you can't get a hold of them, because they're gone. But if he sells his karka, if you have a lien on the karka, then you can go after the people that bought it from him, or you can go after the people he gifted it to, right, that he granted it to, because it's encumbered. You have a lien on that property. But that's when we're talking about him giving it to a third party. When it's in his possession, you could take whatever it is that's in his possession. So it shouldn't matter. You don't have a proof here. You sold him karka. Of course you could take the karka, because the karka is in his possession. If he had a coat, if he had money, you could take anything that he has to get you paid. But our question is, right, keep on bailon, indikne, right, a case where he purchased it, kana umachar, that he wrote in the contract, dikne, anything that comes into your possession will be encumbered to a loan, then he purchased it and sold it. Or dikne, he wrote in the loan that anything I acquire will be encumbered to the loan, and then kana b'horish, and then he acquired it, and then he bequeathed it to someone else. It was given over to someone else. My, what's the din? Our question is not when it's in the debtor's possession. Our question is if the debtor unloads it. He buys it and then unloads it. Do you have a lien on that property? So Amar Rav Chana Tashma. So here it's our Mishnah. Shema Shenafal Bayit Alav Yalaviv. Right, the house fell on him and his father. Alav Val Morishav. Him on his and his bequeathers. Right, Alav Ktubat Tisha Bal Chov. Yosheav Omrim. Right, the Yosheav say a ben made Trishon, that the son passed away first. Vachachach made Av, because that's to their benefit. Ovalei Chovot Omrim Av made Trishon, that the father passed away first. Wait, now let's think about this case. Here, the father, we'll call him grandfather, right? We have Yaakov, Reuven, and then Chanoch Ufalu, the grandchildren. So the question is, the house fell on Yaakov and Reuven. If Yaakov passed away first, then the property comes into Reuven's possession. Reuven has outstanding debts. He's a debtor, and people want to get a hold of it. But Reuven's also passed away now. Reuven's no longer around. His property is going where? To his children, Chanoch Ufalu. So this is exactly the case we're looking for. You have a case where Yaakov has property. There was a debt outstanding against Reuven. Yaakov died first. Reuven all of a sudden has property. But before the Baal Chov got a hold of that property, it's out of his possession and went to his children because they both passed away. So now you have exactly the question we're asking, which was, Dikne Kana V'Horish. That's the question. He acquired it and then he bequeathed it to someone before the creditors got their hands on it. So this is the case we're looking for. So that's Obalei Chovot Omrim Av Meit Rishon. They died first. V'Yisagadata Ikne Kano Machar D'Ikne Kano V'Rish Lo Mishtabed. If you believe that there's no lien on such a property, he namidi Av Meit Bereisha. Right? If the father, even if the father dies first, why does that help you? Right? It's a case of Diknehu. It's a case of property that came into his possession after the loan was outstanding. So if you believe when the loan's outstanding, and then only then does property come into possession of the debtor, there's no lien, then what does he care who died first? He's never going to get his hands on this property because it's not in the possession of the debtor right now. Must be, from our Mishnah that you see, there is a lien, right, on the property. Even property that comes into the possession of the, debtor, even after the fact, you have a lien on that, and then when it leaves his hands, again, you will also be able to chase after those, either acquirers or, recipients of that property. So Amaluhu Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman said Zira Chav and Targumah. He explained it. Zirin explained it this way. That means that your conclusion about the Mishnah may not be right. Why? Because Mitzvah Yitonim Lifra Chovat Aviem. This is a separate issue. The other issue is that Eino Chanami, that there's no Kinyan. I mean that when the property came into Reuven's possession, you didn't have a Shibun on it. Nevertheless, when Chanoch and Falu get their hands on the property, they still have a Mitzvah to repay their father's debts. So the reason over here, the Baal Chov is coming and saying that the grandfather, Yaakov passed away first, then Reuven, and then the Yitomim is to say, listen, your father had property, now that property fell to you, you have an obligation to pay out your outstanding debts of your father.
Is that an obligation, or it's like a...
Oh, it's a very good question. Right, so what is that? So now, if you look in Tosfot differentiates here, Tosfot makes the point. It says, if you look at the Tosfot Mitzvot HaYitomim, the Furuch Chovot, Kofin, kind. We force them to pay it. Mitzvah doesn't mean it's a, you know, nice thing to do. Mitzvah means you're going to do this. The only time, so this is a very important distinction. If you told me you have an obligation to pay their father's debts or help to pay their father's debts, that's only when he left them property, real property. If they inherit real property from their father, they have to then pay the debts of their father. If they inherit from their father other items that are not real property, then in that instance, it's a mitzvah, then they should, it's a nice thing to do, but they're not obligated to pay back their father's debts. So what Rav Nachman's suggesting over here is we can explain the Mishnah. The Baal Chov want the property to end up with Reuven and then with his children, not because it's encumbered to them once it goes to Reuven, but rather, if it went to Reuven and then to the children are now obligated, Chanoch and Falu are obligated to pay the debts of their father, Reuven. So that's why they're obligated. So here you can't draw a conclusion from our Mishnah by the fact that you have a lien on that property. Maybe you have no lien on the property, it's just the Yatomim are supposed to pay. Chanoch and Falu are supposed to pay the debt back.
And even in the other direction, there's still a debt that the son needs to pay.
No, in that case, the property came from their grandfather Yaakov and never came from their father. That's what Tosafot just clarified. Tosafot said the only time they're obligated to pay their father's debt is when they get real property from their father. Father. Here they're going to get it through their grandfather. It never went through their father. And that means that they have no obligation. They could maybe a mitzvah, but they have no obligation to pay the debt in that instance. Because it came from their grandfather and not from their father. They don't have to pay their father's debts with their grandfather's money. That's not their obligation.
And with the ksubas being different, the father gets it? Doesn't the kids get a certain amount of money?
Yeah, but the ketubat, but these might be other children. I mean, ketubat binin dichrin assumes that these children are the mother's children, right? And it assumes that the mother's not alive. If the mother's alive, the ketubat goes to the mother, right? It goes directly to the mother.
Correct.
So you're making two assumptions. One is that she's not alive, and number two is that these are her children.
Yes.
Okay, so both of those don't have to be true in this case, right? All right. Matkifla Ravashi. So Ravashi said, Milva alpehu. V'av ushmo d'amrei tevayu, milva ope, eno guve, lo mina yoshim, velo mina lukuchot. Wait a minute. When we're talking about over here, the Yatomim being obligated to pay the debts of their father, when it comes to the debts of their father, their obligation is an oral obligation. They don't have a written obligation. The written obligation was on their father to pay the debts. In terms of their obligation is simply an oral obligation, that there's an outstanding debt that they're supposed to cover. And Rav Shmuel Amar Tevayo Milva Alpe Eino Gve Lo Min HaYorshim Velo Min HaLekuchot. You can't get it out of the Yorshim and you can't get it out of the Lekuchot. So why all of a sudden over here are we obligating them to pay the debts here when their obligation towards the debt is really derived from a oral, right, obligation and not from a written obligation? Ela Hamani, what do you have to say about our Mishnah? Rabbi Meiri. Our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, Damar Adam Makneh Davar Shalo Bale Olam. So that's how we solve the problem. So now again, our Mishnah we're trying to use to prove that when you acquire, when the debtor acquires property in the future, that then that will become encumbered to the creditor. So we read it first, it looked great. Our Mishnah was a proof. Rav Nachman comes and says, no, it's no proof. Because the reason it might be here that the creditors want the property to go through the son has nothing to do with it becoming encumbered to them, but rather because the Yorshim then have an obligation to pay it. Along comes Rav Ashi and says, what type of solution is this? If you want to suggest that a future shibud does not take hold, then we have a case here where you have a milveh al peh, because the shtar is not relevant to this acquisition of this property. It's not relevant to this lien. And if you're coming to take this property, you're doing it mitoch milveh al peh, and milveh al peh is a totally different din. So how could you suggest that the solution or the reason that he's paying over here is because mitzvah yatomim li froa chovat avihen? Because that's not, wouldn't work over here. Over here, we're talking about a milveh al peh. So it must be that the Mishnah is talking about a case where it is Meshubad. If it is Meshubad, then we have a solution to our question about the Chachamim or what their position is. Then how are you going to explain our Mishnah? No, our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. Our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir who says that you can be Makneh Davar Shelo Bale Olam, which we said before. We said before that with this question about whether a creditor can, or the debtor's property can come and cover it to the creditor in the future, was not a question according to Rabbi Meir. It was clear according to Rabbi Meir it worked. It was only according to the Chachamim that we had a question. So that's the problem. So now what do? You bring a Mishnah and you say, oh, if the Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, you haven't proved anything. You prove that Rabbi Meir's position is that it works. We know that. We didn't have a question in Rabbi Meir's position. We know that Rabbi Meir's position works that way. So we're just going to suggest, Meir's the author of the Mishnah. The reason our Mishnah works that the future property acquired by Reuven is now encumbered to the creditors because it's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir's the author of that position. And we know, according to Rabbi Meir, Lotzi Bailach. There's no question according to Rabbi Meir because Adam Machneh Davar Shelo Baleilam. Because you can acquire that something's not in the world yet. And that's this property. It wasn't in the world, and yet you're acquiring it. That's why it's encumbered. We still have the question outstanding with regards to what the position of the Chachamim is. And so that's... Well, that's what it means. You gave it in the shtar, you wrote that any property I acquire in the future will be Meshubat. So that works. Since it works, it's now Meshubat. It's encumbered to the... creditor, and then the creditor is going after his own property. He had a lien on the property. That's right. That's exactly what he can do.
If the son dies first, right. Why wouldn't it be good for the debtors anyway, according to Rabbi Meir?
Because I'm going to remarry, the son never has any property to give to the creditors. You can be makneh, something that's not in your possession, but something that's never in your possession, you can't be makneh.
He didn't have any of his own property.
Right, that's what we said. It has to be that way. Otherwise, then what are they talking about the inheritance for? Because then he has property that they can take from his direct property. Right? Must be that he has no property, and then the only way he's going to get property is because of his father. Right. So that has to be the situation here. All right. So now, Amar Rav Yaakov Minar Pokod Mishmei de Ravina Tashma. Another proof. Shtar. We know that's Rabbi Meir. We know Rabbi Meir. We want to know about the Chachamim. What's the Chachamim's position? So now we bring another proof. So Amar Rav Yaakov Minar Pokod Mishmei de Ravina. Let's see if we can bring another proof to see what the position of the Chachamim is. Tashma. Shtarei Chov Hamukdamim Psulim. Predated shtarot, meaning debt documents, predated debt documents are pasul. Ve'amucharim ksherim. Those that are post-dated are kasher. So now let's talk about you can have two types of predated contracts. You can have a situation where the loan is given on the 15th of Nisan, and then on the 15th of Nisan, they write a shtar that says that the loan was really on the 1st of Nisan. That's a predated shtar. The other way to have a predated shtar is if they wrote the shtar on the 1st of Nisan, but the debt or the loan was only given on the 15th of Nisan. So in that case, it happens to be machlokes because it depends if the loan becomes outstanding by chotimat edim, the shibud starts with chotimat edim or not. But if you don't believe that the loan is outstanding till it's given, right, then those are both shtarei chov hamukdamim. What's the problem? What's the problem with the predated shtar? The problem with the predated shtar is that the loan was only outstanding from the 15th of Nisan. Yet, the lien that's been granted to the creditor is predating the loan. It's going back to the 1st of Nisan. That means, for instance, if purchasers came and bought property from this debtor between the 1st and the 15th of Nisan, technically, the creditor should have no rights to that property at all. But because the shtar is predated, it looks like he preceded that sale or the transaction, and now he has a lien on that property and can go take it away from those buyers. So you're giving him rights that he doesn't deserve. So because of that, the shtar is pasul. And we say the shtar is pasul. What does it mean that the shtar is pasul? So we've seen this in Bava Metzia. We saw this here again in Bava Vach a little bit, which is, for instance, the shtar yichov that have ribit in them. There the Gemara says that they're psulim. It's machlokas there about what it means pasul. So you can see over here, Tosi says, brings the ri, who is same position by ribit. Omari, the psulim havo the gamre. Dafilu b'nei chare lo gabe, avagav shalo v'modeh. Even if the loan admits that there's an outstanding loan, even the debtor admits there's an outstanding loan, he can't collect anything. The shtar is as if it's non-existent. It's gone. It's a zero. They wipe out. I mean that it's a knas, in a sense, that not only does he lose the fact that he can collect from encumbered property, he loses his ability to collect whatsoever. He loses the shtar. The shtar is a zero now. It's as if it doesn't exist. You could have thought, wait, okay, the shtar is pasul, but it's still documents a loan, and the loan really did happen. So fine, he can't go after encumbered property. Maybe he should be able to go after a free and clear property. No, the answer is no, that the shtar is completely invalid and doesn't help whatsoever. So that's important, right? Distinction over here, when it's with pasul from. We discussed over there, and by rebeat, also the same question, but when a shtar with rebeat, is it just a shtar without rebeat now, or is it not a shtar at all, and there's no loan outstanding? So the same question arises over there. But the Lashon of Psulim sounds like Psulim the Gamre. Now, Mucharim, that's a post-dated shtar. Why do we not worry about a post-dated shtar? Because all you've done is you've limited the rights of the creditor. It's a creditor who's giving out, he's mochal and a shibut. Why do we mind about that? That means anybody who purchases probably, for instance here, where the loan was outstanding on the 15th of Nisan, and they don't date the contract till the 15th of Tishrei, that means that any property that he sells between the 15th and the 15th of Tishrei, the creditor won't get his hands on it. So why do we mind? The creditor just waived some of his rights. That we don't mind. So therefore, they're ksherim. Now, the only problem is, if you believe that property acquired by the debtor after the loan is outstanding does not become encumbered to the loan, then why should mu'ucharim be kasherim? It's sub-acquired in the future. So listen to this. It's an amazing thing, which is that now, if the loan was outstanding starting when? On the 15th of Nisan. They write in the document that the loan was only outstanding from the 15th of Tishrei. The debtor goes ahead and purchases property in Sivan. In between the two dates, he purchases property, and then he goes ahead, and later on, at the end of the Kislev, he goes and sells it. Now, if you believe that you cannot acquired property does not become encumbered, then what happened here? The loan really happened back in Nisan. So this is acquired property, future acquired property. It should not be encumbered to the loan. Yet, what's going to happen? Because the date in the shtar is Tishrei, it's going to be in his possession. It's going to be in the debtor's possession when Tishrei comes around. So when Tishrei comes around, this property is now in his possession, and then he goes and sells it afterwards. And the creditors are going to go after that property, looking like they have a lien on it. But they don't really have a lien on that property. That property happened after the loan. In the shtar, it looks like it happened before the loan. But in reality, it happened after the loan in Nisan. So how could you say that shtarot amucharim are ksherim when you create a situation where there's going to be a detriment to the, right, those that are purchasers? So Mar says, Hamani, Rabbi Meir, no problem, this is Rabbi Meir. And according to Rabbi Meir, you don't have a problem, because you can be makne dovar shel bol olam, demar adam makne dovar shel bol olam, and therefore it's not a problem over here, because even if he acquires property in between, the property will definitely be mishubad, because that's what he writes in the contract, and in the loan, automatically dikne. Amar Masharshia Mishmei Derovel, Tashma. Another proof. Let's see if we can figure out what the Chachamim say here. The Shevach Karkaot Ketzad. When you have Shevach of Karkaot, you don't have, we said this before, that you can collect from a person who has an obligation towards someone. You can go and collect from the principal of the property, but you can't collect from the Shevach of the property. What's the case here? For instance, someone sold a property to the individual, and then the Baal Chov, a debtor, a creditor, comes along and takes the property away from him. Now, in the interim, the person who purchased the property also improved the property. He invested money in the property. So now, when the person who purchaser goes back to the seller of the property, who's also the debtor here, the seller of the property goes, give me my money back. You know, you sold me this property and I had a lien on it and now it's taken away. I want my property back. So when he goes to him, he can take the keren. What he bought the property for, he can ask from him, take it out even in chasim mishubadim. He can take that out of even encumbered property. Whereas the shevach, the improvements he put in the property, he can only take out of bnei charid. He can only take out of free and clear property. When we learned this in the Gemara earlier in here and in Ksubot and other places, the reason why is because when it comes to the keren, when it comes to the physical property, we know what the amount is. So therefore, other future purchasers of property can be careful and say, we left you enough money to deal with it. But with Shevach, Shevach is something that's unlimited. It has no limit. Shevach is something that goes on forever. We don't know. You could invest millions of dollars into the property. How can any future purchaser be careful for the Shevach? He doesn't know what the Shevach is. It's too much to ask of them to be careful about the Shevach. So therefore we say that he can go after purchasers of the property after him for his Karen, for his principal, because that's a known number. But for Shevach, he can't go after future purchaser of the property. So that's what we said here. Kate said, what's the case of Shevach Karkot? Someone sells his property to his friend. And this person, the purchaser, improved it. And the creditor of the seller comes along, but he takes it away. He had a lien on the property, he can take it away. The purchaser, when he goes back to the seller to get his money back, he could go after the Karen, that which he purchased the property for, he can go after him to Chasim Shubadim. He could go after property that was sold after him to other people, he can go and take it away from them. But the Shevach, he can take only from Bnei Chorin, he can only take from the seller himself. If you believe, that future property is not encumbered, then, right, why should the Baal Chov be able to take away from this purchaser the Shevach? Let's think about this. The Baal Chov has a debt outstanding. The creditor now says that the debtor has land. So he has a lien on that land. That land was then sold to another party, and that party improved it. The Baal Chov, the creditor, when he comes here and takes away the property, what does he do? He takes away not only the principal, but he also takes away the shevach, the improvement of the property. The improvement of the property did not exist at the time that the loan was given. That was something that came in the future. So now what are you saying? You're saying that something that came in the future, the Baal Chov is allowed to go and take away. What does that tell you? That tells you that future property acquired is encumbered. That's the answer here. We see from here that future property is encumbered. Otherwise, the creditor would have no rights to go after the Shevach. Shevach is something that was created after the loan, something that was only, right, part of the property or an improvement to the property after the loan was given. And yet, the creditor has rights to it. If the creditor has rights to it, that shows you what? That it must be that future acquisitions are encumbered to the creditor. So what does the Gemara say again? Hamani, Rabbi Meir, he. This is also Rabbi Meir. Damar Adam Aknet Abashol Balolam. That a person can acquire something that is not there yet. So again, so now we have no conclusion to our question with regards to the Chachamim's position about future acquisitions. We don't have any conclusion over here, and based on the fact that it's Rabbi Meir, if Rabbi Meir is the author of all these positions, then we have no conclusion because we know that Rabbi Meir believes that it works. But when it comes to the Chachamim, right, there we don't know what the conclusion is about in terms of future acquisitions, whether they can actually take possession of the property or there's a lien that's established on the property. We don't know if that is the case over here. Now, the Gemara goes on to a new topic here, and starts with another question. This is a new question, a new, you know, situation. Imtim Salomar, Dekne Kano Machar, Dekne Kano Varish, Lo Mishtabed, Ha Lo Mishtabed. If we say that the conclusion of the Chachamim is that when it comes to future acquired property, there's no lien on that property, good, fine, there's nothing to talk about because there's no lien on the property. But Imtim Salomar Mishtabed, if you say it does work, that you're able in future acquisitions by the debtor to get a lien on that property, then loveh, right? So what is it? What's the case? The debtor borrows money, and then he writes in that contract, listen, anything I acquire in the future, that will be encumbered to you. Then he borrows from another party. He borrows again from someone else, and he does the same thing. And he says, anything acquired in the future will be encumbered to you. And then he bought something. Mahu. What's the din? He has two debts outstanding, two creditors. And he wrote the same thing to both creditors. Anything acquired in the future will be encumbered to you. Who has the first right here? The Kama Mishtabet. Do we say that it goes to the first one because he was first? He's the first in line. He gets the first claim. He gets the first lien over here. Oh, the Batra Mishtabet. Or do we say that the latter party also gets some possession over here? Because when he granted him the lien, he basically wiped out the first person's lien. How can he do that? How can he abrogate the rights of the first creditor? You know why he can do it? Because we have a principle. Even according to Rabbi Meir, when you say Adam Makneh Davashu Balu Lam, if for some reason when it comes into the Olam, you do something with it, or you prevent it, you sell it before it comes into the Olam, then he never gets possession of it. You, when you're granted something that is yet to come into the world, you don't get it, it's not yours to have a hold on until it actually comes into the world. So therefore, if he goes ahead and sells that right to someone else before you get to exercise it, your right is gone. So here, he gave the first creditor the right to collect from future property. But then before any property came into his possession, he went and sold that right or gave that right to another creditor. When he did that, he took away the right from the first creditor because the first creditor never could have exercised it yet. And then for when the property is bought, it was already given to the second creditor and the second creditor gets the right. So what's the din over here? This question was asked from us, and they sent from over there that the Rishon Kana, the first one gets it. Ravuna Amar, Yachloku. Ravuna on the other hand says they split it. So this is what I was explaining before, is that there are two possibilities here. The answer, one is either Rishon Kana, the first one gets it because he's the first one with the lien, and therefore he gets the first right, and he'll be the first lien on the property when it's purchased. Or the other position of Ravuna and Rabba Barbu is Yechloku. They'll split it, meaning that they're in pari passu. The two creditors are now on equal footing. If they're on equal footing, when the property is brought into the estate or into the debtor's possession, they both have an equal claim on that property. And they'll both get it at the same time. They both have a right.
Why do we have to say that? I can't just say it's a separate from them. Yechloku.
I guess you could say that. And we don't, like according to Tosus, we don't pass them like Sumchus. Amaravina me madura kama de Ravashi. In our first, you know, hearsay from Ravashi, Amarlan Rishon Kana. He said that the first one is going to madura badra de Ravashi Amarlan Yachloku. He said that they should be Yachloku. So now what's madura kama madura badra? The Rashbam brings two different interpretations. One is that when he reviewed his learning the second time, meaning that Rav Ashi lived 60 years, and he went over his learning every twice a year with the Kala and Nisan and Tishrei. And after he reached 30, he had finished all his learning, and he started again. So Madura Kama and Madura Kabatra is the first time he went over his learning in the first 30 years, and Madura Batra is the second time he went over his second 30 years. That's one possibility explanation of it. The other explanation is, first time he learned it, he spoke to us about it, he said this. Second time he spoke to us about it, he said the other position. So a question of whether it's two parts of his life, 30 years and 30 years, or whether it's he himself, just when he discussed the issue the first time, he discussed it the second time, whether he changed his mind between the two. So the yachloku. So loch is that they're yachloku, and now again, yachloku comes, we said before, it's pointed out, the Rashbam says because they're on peri pasu, and it's pointed out that the other Rishonim say that it's a din in sumchus. Right, it's a din in mamon mutabas afek. We're not sure if it belongs to Rishon Kana or Sheni Kana. If we don't know, then it's mamon mutabas afek. That's why yachloku. Simetevei the shevach karkaot ketzad. So a question, when it comes to shevach karkaot, right, what do we do? Right, so now, if you're right about Yechloku, then he should only be able to get his hands on half the Shevach. Why? We have two creditors now. Who are the two creditors now? There's the original Bachov, who's a creditor, and now the purchaser of the property is also a creditor. Why? What is he going to do? After this property is taken away from him by the Bachov, who's he going to go after? He's going to go after the seller. So who, guess who owes him money? There are two people, there are two creditors here. The first original creditor who had a debt outstanding, and the purchaser is now also a creditor. You have two creditors. If you believe that the halacha is yachloku, that means when it comes to the shevach, that's future property that was acquired in the future, only half of it should belong to the original debtor, and half of it should belong to the purchaser. And you're saying, yachloku, we say that the shevach goes totally to the debtor. Mar says, you know what? You meet the chad shevach, by the way, my gova. You know what the Gemara says? You know what it means, gova? Nami diktoni chatzi shevach. When the Galchov comes and takes, he means takes half a shevach. You can only take half the shevach, and that's the locha, that he only gets his hands on the half the shevach. Just look in the bottom, in the Rashbam, the last Rashbam, by chatzi shevach. Shinuya de samchohu. This is a real answer. Mihashmainan, from this we learn, tahad shmuel damar v'shnaim ochzim, that we know from Shmuel that says, bachov govet the shevach, lo svirlan kavate. But Shmuel says that the Baal Chov takes the entire Shevach. We don't hold like him. Al gove chatzi Shevach. Mahayin ha'alacha. The halacha is we only get half the Shevach and not the whole Shevach. V'kasha, d'hocha by Shmuel, d'iknei mahu. Ma'atam kamar, Baal Chov gove at the Shevach. Wait a minute. Shmuel is the one over here who asked the question about iknei mahu. Right? He's the one who's asking about the question about when it comes to Shibud in the future. He's the one who's asking the question over here. By Shmuel, d'iknei kana mahu. And yet, Vahatam kamar b'chol goveh to shevach dainu diknei diikalam emar alibed remeir kamar inami mibayla on the rabbanon mai viu pashim inafshei diknei kana b'svar de nafshei kamar. So now what do you do? Now you have a steer in Shmuel. You have a steer in Shmuel over here, because over here Shmuel's one asking the question diknei mahu, and yet in the Gemara in Shnei Mokshim he says you can take from the shevach. The Baal Chov takes from the Shevach. If the Baal Chov can take from the Shevach, what's the answer? Of course, Iknei Kana. So Shmuel knows the answer to his question. So there are two possibilities. Either Shmuel over there is talking in the Shita of Rabbi Meir, like we answered over here, or we're saying that according to the Rabbanon, he's asking, right? That he's asking, right? The Pashim Nafshei, Iknei Kana. Sorry, Nafshei Kamar. That he's asking to Rabbanon, and his answer is Iknei Kana. And that's why his position above Metziah is that way. His answer was that it does work, and that, right, and then it works. And that's his Pesach, Halacha. Alright, so we're going to stop over here. I just want to point out that tomorrow's daf, there's a big problem with the girsa here, and the Gemara should really not continue with the Mishnah on the top of Kuvn Nin Chedem and Aleph, but rather with the Gemara at the bottom of Kuvn Nin Chedem and Bet. And that Gemara goes all the way through the first half of Kuvn Nin Chedem and Aleph to the second half of Kuvn Nin Chedem and Bet. So I'll make a decision tonight, but we may go follow, because of the girsa problem, we might go to that Gemara to continue with this Mishnah, and then return later to the Mishnah that comes right afterwards, because it's otherwise the Gemara is actually out of order. And the Rishoni, the Rashbam, the Rabbeinu Tam, and the Rabbeinu Chanan all pointed out that there's a problem here in the girsa, and that the Gemara should really be changed. So we'll discuss that tomorrow. I'll stop here.